There is a blizzard of economic news every day, and in these difficult times, we all make more of an effort to tune in.
The GDP report.
Durable goods.
Irrational exuberance.
Oil is totally fungible.
Bear market.
Leading indicator.
Naked short selling.
Market capitalization.
Hedge fund manager.
Dow Jones, S&P 500.
What does any of that mean? Never fear, we've got a translator for you, Adam Davidson. Today we launch NPR's international economics correspondent into a new role as the intrepid econonaut. Here on Talk of the Nation, from time to time we'll ask him to parse scary economic news and terminology. Adam, nice to have you back.
Hey, Neil, great to be here.
And today it's all about the trade deficit. Wait, don't turn that dial. We'll tell you what the new numbers mean to you. Guess what? They're weird. Plus, we want to hear your stories. If you're in a business that exports big machines or materials, does the trade deficit help you? Does it hurt you? What's the impact on your business? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Adam, give us the old once over here. Looks like good news.
Yeah, this is one of those days where you realize this is a big, complicated, crazy world we live in, and any effort to just have a simple, easy narrative is thwarted on a regular basis. I was talking to an economist today, and I just said, so did this really mess with your narrative that you were working on? He said, oh boy, did it ever. These are the tough days. Yeah, I know. I feel awful for him. And tough days, I mean, for economists, not necessarily the economy. I mean, the headline, I think, is today is really good news. The U.S. exported a lot more goods. The biggest single month jump ever, I think, on an inflation, or certainly in many, many years. We're selling more goods to the rest of the world. That means more money coming in, more jobs, more production, all of that kind of thing. And our imports fell, meaning we're relying less on the rest of the world. And what makes that unbelievably shocking is this was from June, a period when oil prices were incredibly high. And of course, oil prices are a huge part of our imports. So basically what this is saying, you know, if the U.S. was a business, we had a really good month in June, a much better month than anyone expected we would have had. In fact, what makes this kind of a nutty day is economists have calculators and Excel spreadsheets all over the country and are going, wait a second, these numbers mean that the U.S. economy for second quarter, the 3 months that ended in June, grew at 3%.
Wait, we're supposed to be in a recession.
And we're supposed to be in a recession. And it could be 2.9%. We're not quite sure, but these are not recessionary numbers. Now, it gets more complicated, but the headline is, wow, this is a lot better news than the doom and gloom and misery and horror that everyone's talking about. But I can also explain why the doom and gloom might actually be true also.
That's right. But but it's still a trade deficit. We're still importing a great deal more than we export, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, the numbers today, you know, what was it exactly? 50... suddenly lost that number of $56 billion or something like that, trade deficit, meaning that we imported $56 billion more than we exported. You know, that's huge. I mean, these are massive numbers. Without question, every month we get seriously in debt to the rest of the world by a very large amount of money. But it was less than expected.
So yeah, that's good news. But nevertheless, isn't that a big deal over time, month after month, year after year, when we import? And again, a lot of it's oil, but it's not just oil when we import so much.
Yes, it's a big deal. It's a transformative deal. It is a different economy we live in than the economy we had 20 years ago, 30 years ago. In fact, our trade deficit is so big, we get in debt something like 5% of our GDP. I mean, 5% of the money we make a year deeper in debt to the rest of the world every year. And if you had talk to some economists, say 10 years ago, 20 years ago, some would have told you that is theoretically impossible, that an economy would have collapsed under the weight of that. It's not unlike, although it's not exactly like, you know, a credit card debt. If every year you get 5% deeper in debt to the credit cards, that isn't sustainable. And eventually that has to be paid back.
Yeah, to paraphrase Everett Dirksen, a trillion here, a trillion there, pretty soon you're talking real money.
You're talking real money, yes. Now, it's not as simple as the credit card analogy, but here's what people are hoping happen. And by people, I'm now talking about economists. Maybe I shouldn't use the word people so readily. But what economists and analysts are hoping is that what has happened this year is that the U.S. has turned a corner. And 10 years from now or something like that, when we look at the graphs and we look at the period, this will be the time when the U.S. stopped its crazy consumption binge, which we truly have been on for many years, and that what feels like and maybe is a recession and a weak dollar and all of the stuff we're dealing with is actually a transition to a healthier world. You and I have actually talked about this before.
Yep.
And these numbers do support that idea that maybe that's what's happening. We're becoming an economy that doesn't survive on borrowing money from overinflated homes and buys a bunch of cheap junk from Asia that we can't afford. We're becoming an economy that actually makes things that people want and we're selling it to them, and that's fueling our economic growth.
Or it's one aberrational month and we're going to go right back to our
or this is total noise and is completely irrelevant and, we'll be a blip.
All right. We want phone calls from those of you. These trade deficit figures, do they help your business? Do they hurt your business? How are you being affected by the value of the dollar? All of that. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We have a caller, Andrew, with us from Carthage in North Carolina.
Good afternoon. I'm wondering if this explosion in growth in the trade in June is really indicative of a double bottom bull market correction.
All right, double bottom bull market correction. That's one of those phrases that we're going to have translated.
Is that a technical term? What is? Can you explain that?
Well, I wish I could explain it better. From what I understand, based on a very quick overview that I received from Fisher Investments, was that a double bottom bull market correction is similar to in 97-98, where there is a small recessionary period, a quick bounce up and another drop, and then from there everything's corrected and the economy just continues to grow at that point in time.
All right. I understand just a couple of those terms. Bull market is when the market is doing well and prices are going up on the stock exchange. A correction is when those prices drop by 10%. So,
And let me try and there's a whole school of thought called technical analysis, and I'm going to just come out and explain my bias. I don't believe in technical analysis. Technical analysis is people who look at charts of economic activity and in the what I would consider random noise of how the charts bump up and down, whether you're talking about stock prices or price-to-earning ratios or whatever you're looking at, they feel that they can discern patterns and predict future events, and then they invest based on those ideas. There's millions and millions of dollars of books sold every day and websites, and this is a whole world of technical analysis. I'll be honest, and this might be biased, and you can write your angry letters right now, but I see this as akin to astrology or something. It doesn't seem the academic data I've seen does not seem to support that this works. So this sounds like one of those ideas. I'm a strong believer in the idea that we don't know in the middle of something what we're in the middle of, The more certain someone is about what next month will be or what 6 months from now will be, the less confidence I have in what they're saying. So,
Andrew, I used to spend a fair amount of time at the racetrack, and this sounds like one of those theories about betting exacta overlays.
I agree, Neil. I'm an amazing handicapper. I just always lose money at the track, but it's for very technical reasons. The wrong horses keep winning.
Yeah, but that's it. There's no question it was an overlay, but it just right. Another horse won.
Right.
Andrew, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, is this Marcel in Lafayette, Louisiana?
Hi, this is Marcel calling from Lafayette. Thanks for taking the call.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. Your economist here is making a great point in terms of the macro economy, if as far as the entire nation raising point by point. However, if the money that's being made is not making it down to the working class, then we are having at least an effective recession, even though the entire nation may be doing better.
That is completely true. There's no question that much of the country is experiencing a recession.
Michigan.
Michigan, no question. Much of Florida, Central California. There's the housing market-led recession, which exists in many of those places. Obviously, Michigan, we're talking about an auto industry collapse that is causing a recession. Also, the entire recovery, the post-2001 recession recovery, has not seemed to spread to the working class, as he said, to the lower wage earners in the country as much as previous recoveries have been. So it's been a lousy time to be someone without an advanced degree, without a professional level job, although many of those people too have suffered. So yes, there's absolutely no question. I think it's a good time to be a manufacturing employee. It's the best time in a long time to be working in a factory that makes products that are exported overseas. Your life is probably a lot better now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago if you're not in autos and you're not in one of the industries that are directly suffering. It is a good time for them, but for people in domestic manufacturing or other blue-collar professions that aren't benefiting from the exports, these numbers don't help you at all.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking with our econonaut here on Talk of the Nation. That's Adam Davidson, NPR's international economics correspondent, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Matt is with us. Matt on the line from Atlanta, Georgia, of course.
Yes, hi. I work in the fine wine business, and we deal with both domestic and foreign wines. And the trade deficit and the exchange rate with the euro has really made a lot of my prices go up a lot. I mean, I have to charge 60% more in certain cases for certain Italian, Spanish, and French wines. However, the wines I get from Argentina haven't changed in price at all because that currency is pegged to the value of the dollar, and it makes my domestic producers' prices seem a lot more competitive when their prices actually haven't changed, but relative to the European prices, they're a lot lower. And the wines that I have that are quite rare that are produced in California and Oregon, I can't get as much of because they're more attractive on the export market, particularly in China.
And so you're having to read the Wall Street Journal just as much as you read Wine Spectator.
It's actually a much more useful publication, frankly.
That's not atypical, I don't think, Adam.
No, I thought that was a beautiful explanation of exactly what's happening, and you could apply that. I mean, I'm looking at the statistics. Soybean sales have gone through the roof for very similar reasons. Same with corn and wheat and poultry. These are American-grown or American-made goods. We've been selling. There's a huge spike in precious gems and diamonds, American-made, American-cut gems and diamonds, and mostly from Manhattan, as far as I know.
West 47th Street, yeah.
47th Street, just a few blocks from where I'm sitting right now. Jewelry, pharmaceuticals, even American-made TVs and VCRs. To be honest, I didn't think there were any American-made VCRs, but apparently we had a real nice uptick in those. Because
we're probably still making beta systems.
Maybe. Yeah, well, maybe that. Toiletries and cosmetics, records, tapes, and discs. I mean, what is fascinating to me is I'm looking at all these industries that I thought had gone. I mean, we sold $1 billion of toys in that month. I didn't think we made any toys. I thought pretty much all toys were made in China or other low-wage Asian countries. So this is really spreading throughout, the low end and the high end of exportable goods. This is the weak dollar is a good story for those folks.
Matt, thanks very much for the call. Good luck with your business.
Thank you very much.
And Adam, just a couple of news items today about the economy. We learned today that two-thirds of U.S. corporations, with trillions of dollars in sales collectively, pay no income tax. And we're told this isn't news. It's no big deal. This happens every year.
Yeah, it's been happening for a very long time. I mean, this was this GAO report that came out at the request of two Democratic congressmen saying we need to change our tax laws and that many corporations are using dodges to get out of paying taxes. It's a little deceptive, I would say, or deceiving or not clear, because they're just saying two-thirds of companies, with each company, no matter how big it is, counting as one company. Of course, in America, the vast majority of companies are very small companies. I mean, I personally was a pretty broke freelance reporter for several years, and I think I count it as a company. You know, if you have a two-man accounting office or whatever, that counts as a company.
Lies, damned lies and statistics.
Right, right. I mean, my understanding is the vast majority of big companies, I mean, if you're talking about large companies, are paying taxes. Of course, they're spending
GM,
a lot of money.
Yes.
Right. I mean, they're spending a lot of money getting out of paying taxes, and that's a – we could obviously spend hours talking about that issue. But
quickly, another number out today, demand for oil in this country, and I guess that's related to this trade deficit number, demand for oil dropped by 800,000 barrels a day, and that sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. We I forget the numbers off the top of my head. I think global demand is about 80 million barrels, and we're about a quarter of that.
20 million, yeah.
Yeah, 20 million. So that's yes, I mean, finally, prices reached a point where U.S. consumers changed their behavior. They drove fewer miles. They drove less. And they're buying different kinds of cars. And they're making different kinds of choices, which is what is supposed to happen. So it took a long time for it to happen. It was really, you know, when oil was at $20 a barrel, we thought that when it hits $30 or $40 a barrel, everyone's going to change their behavior. Turned out it needed to hit $80, $90, $100, $120 before people changed their behavior.
Adam Davidson is our econonaut as well as NPR's international economics correspondent. He joined us from his capsule aboard the New York Bureau. Adam, thanks very much for being with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Neil.
If you have questions about the economy, don't suffer alone. Drop us an email. talk@npr.org is the address. We'll put the fun back in Fungible next week, too, and Adam will translate. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We'll